Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate.
Oil's back near 70.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Oil prices have retreated a little bit this morning, but yesterday they spiked to 9-month highs above $69 a barrel. One of the problems, oil workers in Nigeria calling for a strike. If this happens, you can bet we're going to feel it at the gas pump here. Jeff Tyler reports.
The Nigerian labor unions calling for the strike want to stop the privatization of two oil refineries and reverse a hike in their gas prices. The country's oil production is already suffering as militants have sabotaged facilities and kidnapped workers. Nigerian crude is good for making gasoline and a key source of supplies for U.S. refineries. Michael Lynch is with the consulting firm Strategic Energy and Economic Research.
Because the oil market is so tight right now, any kind of news like this is going to send prices up in the near term. But ultimately, the reality is that Nigerian strikes are a dime a dozen. This happens quite a bit. There probably won't be any actual loss of oil production.
Lynch says the Nigerian government usually works out a deal with unions to avoid a lengthy strike. In the short term, he expects the Nigerian standoff will raise prices in the U.S. by about 5 cents a gallon. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Trivia question for you. What's the oldest soft drink in America? It's not Coke. I'll give you a hint.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Dr. Pepper was first sold in 1885 at a corner drugstore in Waco, Texas. Now it might be sold again, as in the whole company. British group Cadbury Schweppes is looking for a buyer for its soft drinks unit, which includes Dr. Pepper and 7-Up. Cadbury also said today it's cutting 7,500 jobs. That's 15% of its workforce around the world. Another well-known brand is up for sale, Wendy's. But yesterday, Wendy's said next quarter's performance won't be very good. So finding a buyer might be a little difficult. Jill Barchet reports.
Wendy's profits aren't pretty, but speculators have pushed the company's market value up by a third since April. John Hamburger publishes Franchise Times magazine. He says Wendy's may be too expensive now.
I think they can't find a buyer at what Wall Street was expecting.
Wendy's founder Dave Thomas famously asked the question, where's the beef? Mr. Hamburger says Wendy's problem is that executives took their eye off the beef.
They really haven't focused as much on the Wendy's business since Dave Thomas died. And if you look at all that's been going on at Wendy's over the last couple of years, it's really been a zoo there.
Wendy's dumped donut chain Tim Hortons and lost almost $250 million when it sold Mexican restaurant Baja Fresh. It's not that private equity firms don't have an appetite for fast food. They made a bundle on Burger King. But at $40 a share, Wendy's isn't exactly appetizing. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. Science and Technology Reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Time for our series, Nuts and Bolts, Building a Small Business. Listeners are sharing their stories of success and failure as entrepreneurs. Let's say you've invested months or years creating a business. You've poured your heart into it. You've poured your money into it. But it's just not working out. How do you know when it's time to pull the plug? Once again, here's Steve Tripoli from our entrepreneurship desk.
The spray guns are busy these days at Mike Shipstead's business. His shop in Santa Clara, California specializes in spray-on plastic coatings for pickup truck beds. Things are good now, but for a couple of years, Shipstead operated closer to the edge.
You know, people asking for payment and not enough customers coming in, and you're wondering why the phone's not ringing.
He says deciding whether to go on when times are tough is like flying through fog. His test in those times was to ask himself three questions.
Is there an opportunity to grow? Can we get there as a business? Do we have the people and the resources? And then, I guess thirdly, do I want to go there?
As long as he answered yes to all three, he kept going. A couple of towns away, lawyer Christy Prinz is an entrepreneur by necessity. The law firm, where she was nearing partner status, collapsed. Launching her own practice has been rough going. Her test of whether it's time to pull the plug has more to do with stress levels. She's seen other struggling entrepreneurs feeling so desperate they were falling apart.
And I think if I had ever gotten to that point for more than a day, then at that point I would have perhaps decided to throw in the towel.
In Dundee, Michigan, listener Paul Perdue's internet-based business has folded. A load of debt and a long scramble for new cash ended with a potential investor's verdict.
His words to me the second before I turned to my wife and said, we're going to have to close this, were we had dug too deep of a hole.
So three people whose businesses cover the range from failed to hanging on to thriving. But Paul Perdue, Christy Prinz, and Mike Shipstead draw startlingly similar lessons about avoiding that pull-the-plug decision. Perdue, whose business went under, speaks first.
Watch costs and understand what you could not be spending.
Tighten up the capital, tighten up the collections. In the end of the day, there's no business unless you have the money.
I think what I've learned is start with as little overhead as possible.
So getting and handling startup money really matters. Entrepreneurs tend to be optimists who have a hard time pulling the plug. That's why our small business expert, Patty Green, says someone they trust should monitor decision making.
Whether it's a spouse or a partner or a parent or a business partner, whatever it might be. But for them to remind you that this is the bottom line on what you can actually afford to lose.
It's not just about money. It's about what you can take emotionally and even how the business is affecting relationships. So Green really likes Mike Shipstead's three questions. Is there an opportunity to grow? Can we get there? And do I want to go there?
Because they include not just about the business, but about him personally.
Green says your three questions don't have to be the same. Just be sure to have your personal pull-the-plug measuring stick. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
There's lots more about our series Nuts and Bolts on our newly redesigned website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.